Skiing is good for the soul. We always go out there. We're just trying to find the perfect turns, and it's all about soul skiing.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Mountain Cosmos. I'm your host, Rochelle Gilmore, a ski instructor and all-around mountain-loving person. And this podcast is about capturing the many different facets of mountain life. Usually, I split my time between winters in Australia and Jackson Hole in the States. But at the moment, I'm at home in Perth in Western Australia, where there are no mountains. But I'm using this time to collect some awesome stories about life in the mountains while I wait to get back to the mountains. Anyway, in this episode, I sit down and have a chat with one of my favorite ski buddies from Jackson Hole, Bulla Rourke. We cover a lot of interesting topics in relation to what it's like to live and grow up in a mountain town like Jackson Hole, moving away for college and then coming home, his head injury, his stint as a ski instructor for one season, his stoke on skiing, when he got his Jackson Hole Air Force patch, and what the whole movement means to him, as well as Rendezvous Mountain Pirates, the ski group Bulla and some of his friends started. Just to name a few things, Bulla tells me some pretty awesome stories. I tell some as well. We discuss what winter could look like in Jackson for the 2021 season, as well as some of the ski season pass dilemmas that Bulla is going through at the moment as to whether to buy one or not for the winter in Jackson Hole. Also, if you're not quite up to date on what the Jackson Hole Air Force is, you can always go back and have a little listen to the episode I did with Benny Wilson. It's one of my earlier episodes. And just before we jump into this episode, I wanted to let you know that there is a language warning on this one. I hope you enjoy this chat just as much as I did. Okay, Bulla, do you want to introduce yourself?
My name is Bulla Rourke. I am 28 years old. I'm from Jackson, Wyoming, and my entire livelihood revolves around skiing and mountains, and I always love being surrounded by people with the same identity as that, so it's good. That's why we all come out here and live here, because we all want to do the same shit.
Yep, and that's how we became friends.
Yes, it is. Absolutely. Also Mount Buller, too.
And Mount Buller.
That, too. And my boy, yep.
Yeah, so Bulla and I met on a chairlift, well, chairlift line back in the day, a couple of years ago. And my housemate and I, Tash, let him ski with us. That is how we became friends.
Very generous of you. Thank you for allowing me to tag along. Thank you for that.
You were nice. Like, you asked if you could come skiing with us. And we
I
said,
did.
We said yes.
I was skiing by myself.
You ski by yourself a lot, though.
I do. I don't know. It's kind of like a nice therapeutic sort of thing for me. Because, like, you know, and like, especially with last season, I always liked when people, I run into people. It's like, Fuller, it's like so good to see you. It's like, we should go ski. It's like, okay, cool. And it's like, when you're free, it's like, I'm out here every single day. If you would like to ski with me, there are two options. You call me, or you find me on the mountain. I am not reaching out to you. I'm not playing the meetup game because I've done that so many times, and sometimes it just doesn't go well. And it just takes a lot of time to make plans, to hash out whatever. So yeah, I'm not about that.
It can be frustrating when someone will be like, yeah, we'll meet up, and then you don't find them for like hours on end.
Yeah, or like when someone like calls or texts you, it's like, hey, do you want to go ride? It's like, yeah, absolutely. It's like, cool. Meet at the base of the Gandhi at 10 o'clock. 10 o'clock, perfect. You get there, it's 10 o'clock, 10:10, 10:15, 10:20, 10:30. You like call them up. It's like, dude, where are you right now? It's like, oh, I just got into Sweetwater. I'm just going up to my locker right now, throwing on my gear. Are you serious right now? It's like, really? And so at that moment, in this specific moment, he's like, yeah, I'll like hit you up later. And I was like, it's like, cool. I just hung up and I did not pick up the phone when he called me because I don't want to do that. I don't vibe with that.
Okay. Shall we get into the hard hitting questions?
I'm nervous, but sure. Let's hear it.
What do you love about the mountains, Bulla?
In general?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
It's a big question.
What was that thing that I mentioned? Oh, God.
Do you want me to read out your message?
Yeah. Like, that was, like, it was too good.
It was too good.
You asked me this question, like, give me an idea, and I had, like, the perfect response for this. So now I have to go to Facebook and look this up. What did I say?
We've messaged a lot since I asked you this question.
I can find this. Never say never.
Okay.
It's gonna take a while.
Gosh, we've really had story time in the last few days.
Yeah. yeah, this is gonna take a while. Holy shit. You found it?
Well, you said, I'm good at interviews. Oh, what do you love about the mountains? Let's start with that. And you said, it's the perfect thing to make us humble, that there are things in the world that are bigger than us, and we need to admire and appreciate what they offer us on an emotional and spiritual level. That was real deep.
See, like, that's the thing. Like, I'm glad that we were able to find it, because you know for a genuine fact I would not be able to recite that again. No, I wouldn't.
But you'd probably just give me a different answer. You can give me a different answer if you want.
I know I can, but, like, that was just, it's like something that you throw in, like, your high school, like, yearbook quote or something like that. Like, that shit was amazing. Perfect. I finally found this. I did it. I actually, you know what? I'm going to copy and paste this shit. I'm going to hold on to this. That's the best thing I could say about that. 100%.
Why the spiritual level?
Well, the spiritual level is just, I think it's really cool because like the seasons change and everything. The mountain changes. We change. We grow as a person. Mountains grow. And it just, not only are we learning or growing up with others, growing up around the mountains help us become who we are as individuals. And it's indescribable. It's tough to put into words. It's more of a feeling, more than anything.
Well, because for people that don't know, Bulla is like as Jackson as you can get, I would say.
I am crusty as hell.
What? Because you've grown up, obviously, you grew up in Jackson. What was that like?
It was great. It was awesome because I got to go out. I got to do the things I wanted to do, whether it was go skiing, biking, camping, swimming in lakes, hanging out with friends. My parents really liked doing that sort of stuff too. It was good. But as you like start growing up here, you start traveling around and going to real Wyoming, because Jackson is not Wyoming by any means. It really isn't. It's like an anomaly. And you go to like Riverton, Lander, Torrington, Casper, Cheyenne, Laramie, wherever, anywhere else in Wyoming, that is real Wyoming. You know, we have this like little nook that's, of course, everyone wants to come out and experience. And I don't blame them, but out of this world.
It's definitely like being an Australian, and like the first time I came to Jackson, I was like, this place, I don't know, it has like a vibe, but it's also, it doesn't even feel real, like what people think America is.
It's, you know, and it's so funny because like, you know, with like the limited land that we have to use, because we can only use like 90, we can only use 2% of the land because 98% is like Forest Service land. And like, of course, housing market here is ridiculously high, and you could get the same views or same kind of like experience if you were to live in Alpine, Victor, Driggs, Pinedale, or whatever. But there's something about like being on this side, because you know the community is going to retain the same size, because it can't grow, because the Elk Refuge, Grove Bond Wilderness, Cache Creek, and all this other stuff. Like, there's so much backing us up where it's like, we know that it's going to primarily be what it is now. That's great. I'm all for that.
Yeah, I've been learning a little bit about the land and like how it's all kind of like locked in and everything. There's this podcast called Yonder Lies, and it's like just covers all these Jackson things. It's quite interesting. Just looking from like the outside in is what it feels like sometimes. But yeah, it's definitely like an interesting valley with all like the billionaires and all the locals and all of that stuff, and how it all started with like Rockefeller. And I find that really interesting.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, those, you know, it's one of those things, like, we have all these second homeowners here, and they, you know, sure, it's their second homes and everything, But they still pay the taxes and whatnot, so it helps pay for a lot of shit around here.
Keeps things going.
But it's just, I don't know, it's just troubling. Like, I could go into this. This is not a discussion to have, I feel like, on this type of podcast.
No, I don't usually ask, like, full and hard-hitting questions about land rights and taxes.
Moving on.
Why'd you stay in Jackson? Maybe we've already covered this, but... Because you moved away for college, right?
Yeah, I went to Montana State up in Bozeman, and lived there for 4 years. It was great, but all my friends that I went to school with, you know, coming from, like, California, different parts of Montana, like, Colorado, Idaho, Washington, Oregon, wherever, even on the East Coast too. It had a really cool appeal to it, but I would always kind of view it as a college town. It would always be my college town, which is not a bad thing. But a lot of my friends that continue to live there are living there solely because they've never lived in a ski town before. And I always knew that I was gonna, no matter what I did, it's like, I'd be happy to go try a different place for a season, this or that, go travel around. But I always would know that I would have this place as my home forever.
It's a pretty awesome place to call home. I know I definitely feel like so split right now, not being allowed to like be there. It's so weird, like, I can't just, like, get on a plane and be there now in, like, a day and a half. That's, like, such a strange thing for me.
Well, lucky for you, we are going to be more welcoming, but everyone else just hates the United States. Americans cannot travel anywhere. They just think we're idiots. Then again, they're not wrong. We're all stupid, so. too good.
Yeah. I feel like when the whole thing kind of, like, all hit the fan in March, or was like hitting the fan in March, there was like that outbreak in New York, but in Australia, everyone was like fighting over toilet paper and stuff. And I was like, haha, look what the silly Aussies are doing. And now, yeah.
Right. Like right when it started in the springtime, it was just, you know, it made sense. And it still makes sense now because, like, we have people from like California, Texas, Florida coming out here. Because all their bars and restaurants have shut down because they couldn't keep their shit together. Now everyone's traveling out here. And National Geographic just literally posted an article talking about how big of a clusterfuck Jackson is right now. And they're not wrong. Crazy times.
Yeah. I did see that you shared that, but I have not read it yet. I've seen a lot of headlines related to that, not just the National Geographic one. And it's like crazy, crazy. Okay, let's get away from COVID because that's really annoying. How many days do you, well, I know this, but you ski a lot. How many days do you ski a season?
I'd like to get over 100 days every year. I just got 10 consecutive years of over 100 plus days of skiing. I think in like the past 10 years I've skied maybe about, I'm just throwing out a number, maybe like 12 or 1300 days.
Whoa.
So very, very stoked about that.
You're always stoked on skiing, even when conditions aren't that great.
Well, duh. I mean, like, there is no such thing as bad skiing, just bad skiers. So, you know, if people go out there and just like think it's like, oh, the conditions are shit. It's like, if you think that they're shitty, they are going to be. But if you know how to work around it or do certain runs, you can enjoy it.
Yeah.
Like, take it as it is.
Exactly. I mean, you're literally, like, one of my favorite people to ski with, so.
Oh, pish posh. You're too kind.
I just don't like following you through Wiggles because that's pretty scary.
Oh, Wiggles. I miss Wiggles so much.
Okay. I want to ask you about this, about, because you have a patch, an Air Force patch.
Yep.
Tell me a little bit about that and like what it means to you. Yeah. Because obviously like I had Benny Wilson on the podcast back when I first started and I asked him about what it means to have a patch now, but he obviously like was one of the guys that invented it. But what does all like Jackson Hole Air Force mean to you?
It meant and means everything to me. Like, you know, so when I was a kid and everything, actually, Benny was one of my first ski instructors. And so I I spent so much time with the Hostile X. You know, Benny's brother, Mike, is the dad to one of my closest friends, Sam Wilson, who is like one of the rowdiest skiers. Like, it's like crazy to say, like, he literally can go, like, Sam could go like 5 years without skiing. And the first day that he's back on skis, he's still better than everyone. He does everything so effortless. And so growing up, going to the Hostel, hanging out with like the Wave, Benny, the Hunt brothers, the Miller brothers, you know, with all those guys, even like John Beatty, and, you know, my pops being an orthopedic surgeon, he was their doctor. Like he kept the Air Force members, those OG members together for like 30 years. And so I will always remember when my buddy Ian and I were at the base of Thunder. And like the thing with like getting an Air Force patch is it's such like a mystical thing. It's like it's, you know, spiritual. It's just like a very, very cool feeling. And my friends and I, it was like always our goal. It's like, we want to get an Air Force patch. It'd be so cool and everything. Before I got my Air Force patch, Benny was, you know, egging us on because we were ducking ropes, jumping off cliffs, doing whatever we wanted to. We were being little pieces of shit on the ski hill. And he was telling us that we should start our own crew, which we did. We called the Rendezvous Mountain Pirates, which I'm super stoked. Just kind of making a comeback right now. But so we did that for like years and we still do it. And then Ian and I, we were at the base of Thunder. We saw Benny. He just skis up to us, reaches into his jacket, hands us patches, pins, stickers, and everything, and then he just skis away. We were just on cloud nine for the rest, and we still have been. And it's just so cool because I've been to other ski hills, and they immediately just like, it's like, oh, it's an Air Force member. It's like, oh, it's an Air Force member. And I don't know. It's just like, it's just a really, really cool thing because I idolized, and I still do. I want to be exactly like all of them because they want to be like Pepe. And Pepe Siegler is one of the most ripping skiers back in the day. He was unbelievable. But yeah, it means everything to kind of be a part of something larger than skiing. So
it definitely is. I feel like it goes with that whole movement of those guys. Like, I don't know. It's so cool. When I first got to Jackson, I had no idea what any of it was, especially like my first season. And then like my housemates like made an effort to be like, you need to know about this.
And it's so cool because like they're some of the nicest people you could ever meet. But, you know, just like hearing some of the stories that they would do and everything and what they did, the wall of voodoo and all this sort of stuff was just, it's iconic. And the reason we have open gates out here is because of them. So we have to thank them for that.
That has like had such an impact like internationally as well. Like it's not just Jackson, an American thing. That's like a global thing now that other ski resorts have. Like when I did my season in Japan, that was like a full on gate system. And like that's why people go to Japan, is so that they can ski out the gates. But like Jackson doing that, there's no way anyone would be able to ski backcountry in Japan. Like you would go to jail. Maybe that's a bit extreme, but I think that that's actually true.
I think that actually might be true. I think I've actually read articles about that sort of stuff. Because that's what happened here. Like they would have like deputies and shit like that, you know, being on the dark side on the traverse outs, and they would like stop you. It's like, hey, like you can't be here. It's like it's Forest Service land. It's like, nah, you still can't be here. I was like, let's go. It's cool. It's really cool seeing kind of like the movement that they started. And like I always look at what they did for skiing, like what the Z Boys and like Dogtown did for skateboarding in the 70s. It's like the same mentality. Like it just takes that one spark to just start an entire movement. And that's what they did for skiing.
I just love like learning about all of that. I don't know. I feel so lucky to be like acquainted with Benny, basically. Because like ever since I did the podcast with Benny, he's always like, I see you all the time now. And we did like some privates together this like past season, and it was pretty fun. He's really fun to hang out with.
he's a blast. But I do remember that one party that you had. I think it was some people from New York or something.
Oh, yeah. The ones, yes. I can't believe that. So we had some people that were like super high maintenance. Within 5 minutes of meeting them, they'd like left us outside for an hour and a half. And like they finally decided to like come out from breakfast. And Benny and I and another instructor like walked down into the Four Seasons to find them. And they, you could just tell they were going to be super high maintenance. Like the dad with his like slicked back hair and the mum in like this little tight like Euro outfit. They're like kind of cute little kids. And then, like, the dad is like, get them outside. They're going to get too hot, blah, blah, blah. And the dad's like, Rochelle, you're from Australia. And I was like, yeah, I'm from Australia. And then, like, a couple of minutes later, once we're outside, he turns to Benny and goes, I don't know if I want my daughter to ski with a girl from Australia. What does she know about skiing? And then Benny just like jumped to my defense and was like, oh, yeah. So she skis more than most people in the world. Like she skis double winters. And then by the end of the first day, like that's just kind of how the day went. And I just stood there and was like, would you like me to make a lunch booking? Anyway,
yeah.
By the end of the first day, like us three instructors all thought that we were going to be fired from these people. Super busy time. We got brought back for the second day and they ended up not wanting to ski with Benny and the other instructor. And I was just like, oh my God, I'm stuck with them now. What am I going to do? It was a pretty weird time. But I remember just like, after that first day, Benny would like grabbed my hand and was like, he's like, let's just sit. It's okay. We'll be all right. And then on the second day after Benny got fired, we were at the bar and he walked in and everyone, and he was like, I got fired at the Hof. Oh, what a week. I can't believe I stayed with them for an entire week. They ended up like chilling out, but those first 2 days, I was like, oh my God, it was quite the adventure.
Oh, I bet.
I just love, but I also really loved how Benny like reacted to it all. He was just like, thank God I'm out of here.
That's how, like, working in like a ski town like this is kind of how you have to, like, you just can't. I genuinely care about others as much as I can, sometimes even more than I do myself. But like working at the Moose and everything, like when I first started there, I'll admit I was definitely a pushover. It's like, oh yeah, I'll help out, do this, do that, whatever. And then now, like, my skin has gotten pretty thick. I'm still super helpful. I'm still super nice, but I don't take shit from anyone. You know, when you have those moments with like those people, that's like what you were talking about earlier. It's just like, bye, Felicia. It's like, you're never going to see this person ever again.
And they were like, next year we want to ski with you again. And I was just like,
you should have just said no. Not.
Probably won't even be allowed to travel out of the country. But anyway, like, it was so weird. Like, for me, with like when that all happened, I was just like, wow, I can't believe that people could be that disrespectful. Like, one, they had no idea who they were skiing with. And two, just in general, they were so rude. After skiing with them, I took several days off just to like recover and enjoy life.
It's emotionally draining.
I think I just went skiing with you.
Yes. Fuller coming through as a placebo effect. I'll take that.
Rescuing my soul. Getting in touch with my spiritual mountain side.
Skiing is good for the soul. Like when you go out and you just, we always go out there. We're just trying to find the perfect turns and it's all about soul skiing.
And trying to keep up.
Yeah, fuck you. No.
You're fast, but I can hang on sometimes. Okay, what else can I ask you about? You had like a pretty serious head injury, which I remember you telling me about. Tell me a little bit about that, if you want to.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. So I was junior of college, and they started the school year on a Wednesday, or I think a Thursday, actually, of, you know, like first week, Thursday, and you know, it's just like itinerary or looking at curriculums and all that sort of stuff and what they're going to go over classes. Super, super easy weeks and whatever for the first 2 weeks. And so I don't remember me going out, but I went out longboarding. If anyone from Bozeman is listening, I was on campus. I parked at TNC and I cruised down the hill by, went by, you know, north and south hedges and everything. And then and all that sort of stuff. Then I went over to the duck ponds and I guess I hit my head really hard and I regained consciousness 2 days later in the Missoula hospital because I was airlifted there. And side effects have been permanent scarring to the frontal lobes of my brain, partial deafness and constant ringing in my right ear, and no sense of smell. So I did that about 8 years ago now. So I don't remember anything from it. And crazy time in my life.
No one has any idea about how it happened, right?
Nope. I regained consciousness 4 a.m. that Thursday of that week. I like woke up. You know, see like heart monitors, like blood pressure, like this and that, just all these like monitors going off. And I'm just like freaking out. And so I like went back to sleep. And then my pops comes in. We're talking to the doctor. And of course, you know, the doctor said stuff. And my dad's at me. I was like, no, show me the CAT scans. Show me the MRI. He's like, I'm going to look at this. I'm a surgeon. I got this. It's like, all right. He's looking at it. And it's like, oh, okay. My pops checks me out of the hospital that day. Fly up to his lake house in Polson, like it's a 25 minute flight from Missoula. And then I couldn't eat. I could hardly drink. I just like was so sick to my stomach, and I had concussive side effects for about 3.5 weeks after, you know, fracturing my skull. And I remember it was Sunday evening, and you know, my pops, we were watching a movie or something like that. I was so tired, and my pops was like, "Hey, I think I'm gonna send you, like, you're gonna go to school. Like, I'm gonna send you back tomorrow." It's like, and are you serious?
School, so, yeah, being university,
the semester and everything.
I'm just saying, school being university.
It's like I'm gonna send you back to school. I pay for tuition and everything. Like, yeah, you're gonna go to school. It's like, okay. So luckily enough, my oldest sister Taylor sent out a huge email to everyone at the university saying, like, hey, my little bro had this happen to him. Just know it's gonna take him a little bit of time to get back in the swing of things. They were all super nice. All my teachers were great. It wasn't until like 2 or 3 years ago where my pops and I, we were sitting down watching the Cubs game, and he just turns to me. We weren't even talking. He just turns to me. He's like, you know, I probably shouldn't have sent you back to school after your head injury. I was like, you think? He's like, yeah, I dropped the ball on that one. It just leaves at that. Thanks, Pops. But yeah, so I have no recollection of what happens. I met with a campus police officer that found me. I asked her what she found, what happened. She's like, well, I was doing my rounds and, you know, just driving around the campus. And I just saw you seizing up in a pool of your own blood. And I was shocked. And just the whole idea that fracturing my skull and having that happen and only having the side, granted, like, I have the side effects for the rest of my life, but it could have been a hell of a lot worse for me. So I am very, very fortunate that the outcome was not as severe as it could have been.
Crazy. I knew about the ear ringing. I didn't know that you've like lost your sense of smell as well.
Yeah, so I have no sense of smell.
Like nothing.
Nothing. Like, if I, you know how like vinegar has like a really strong, like it burns. Yeah. The nostril has like that definitive like scent to it.
Yeah.
That I can tell, but it has to be like super potent and everything. So a lot, I literally cannot smell anything except if it's like vinegar. People like say, it's like, oh, like smell this whiskey. Like I can't. But no, I mean, it's cool. It helped me grow into the person I am today. And as weird as it sounds, I'm grateful for it because, you know, makes me appreciate how little time we have to do the things that we want to do and to not take things for granted.
Exactly. How old were you when that happened? Like,
yeah, I was 20.
That's such a big thing to happen then. Gosh.
Yeah.
So let's diverge. How is Rendezvous Mountain Pirates?
It's great. So we started when we were in like high school and everything because we wanted to do what the Air Forcers did, but just like do our own thing. And Benny was the one that was instigating us to do it because, you know, we skied with him all the time, and we were like, oh, we want to be part of the Air Force. And he's like, fuck that. You guys should just do your own thing. So we did. I still have my original patch and everything. And then always, like, we're drawn to it and everything. Like, even if we didn't, like, have our ski jackets or whatever, it's like, we always were just like, oh, RMP, let's go. And wasn't until at the beginning of last winter, while I was, like, thinking to myself, it's like, you know, why don't we just, like, make, like, a kind of like a second coming of it. So I asked my good friend Ryan D. Ryan, if you're listening, hello. Since he's a graphic designer too, I showed him like the original patch. I was like, just give us your idea of it. And he did. And it turned out great. And we changed some little details, like some pull strap, bigger like power baskets and everything, because he's a snowboarder, so he doesn't know this stuff. And so yeah, I've been handing out patches and pins and stuff like that. I got stickers, and it's just such a cool thing. I give it to like my friends, you know. It's like, I just want people to have fun while skiing. And there are people that I'm friends with that I don't think that it would be good for them to have it, because we just don't have the same mentality with skiing. And it's nothing against them, that's just the truth of it. And actually, Rochelle, I need to give you one. Yeah, 100%. And like, a lot of people are like really stoked about it. Like, it may not mean, like, I give them these patches and they may not wear it or whatever, but like, it's cool for me. And there have been those people where I give it to them. Like, I actually gave one to the current Queen of Corvettes, Veronica Paulson. I gave her one. She was super ecstatic. She was jumping up and down, and like, she's like, I'm gonna throw this on my pack. It's like, yeah, put it wherever. It's like just keep doing what you're doing. Like, just live and ski. Live, breathe, and ski. That's literally it. So, I got my chest right here, and it's full of patches and pins. So,
I just think it was like such a fun thing that you were telling me about it this past winter. What happened to your Vegemite patch that I got you?
Gosh, I don't know where the Vegemite patch is. You may need to send me some more patches. I could always use more patches. send me some misfits, skulls and shit like that. No, but it's just, it's all on that mentality of just soul skiing, going out and having fun.
Do you want to tell me about your season as a ski instructor? Just because I love how you tell the story about it.
So I got done with college. I was like, cool. I just want to go home. I just want to ski. I want to be a ski bum, like, for the winter, and then I'll figure out work or whatever. Both of my parents are just like, yeah, no, you can't do that. It's like, you got to work. It's like, fuck. All right. So I got done in December, and the only job that will hire literally anyone and I can guarantee you get a ski pass is being a ski instructor. So I became a ski instructor. And it was cool because, you know, like, there's Brock, there's Gage, there's Polly, there's a couple of other people that were my ski instructors. And when I first, like, came in, like, it's just weird, like, me having the red jacket on and everything, it felt really, really weird, at least for me.
I can't even imagine it.
So, like, I didn't know, like, how everything went. I remember going in to, like, grab jackets and, all like, uniforms and all that shit. And I saw, like, black ones. I was like, oh, I want a black one. Fuck yeah. I went out to check out. It's like, oh, are you doing... It's like, oh, are you a snowboard instructor? It's like, no. Are you doing park and pipe? No. Then what are you doing with a black jacket? Because I like the color? No, you gotta get a red jacket if you're a ski instructor. It's like, fuck. It's like, all right.
I mean,
like, nothing against red.
You do ski mostly, like, in all black.
Yeah.
You're super
stealthy. It's
better
to blend in.
When you're ducking ropes and...
You can blend in so much easier. So that's, I don't know what to say in that moment. But anyway,
you would never duck a rope ever.
Oh, God, no.
No.
Never. But yeah, so I got the job. As you know, like, I was always in the back of the group because I never wanted to get work. I remember there would be a handful of moments where it's like, all right, like, we need some people to work. And it's like, as I'm like in the bag, they like point, it's like, Buller, you have not worked literally at all this winter. You need to work. It's like, all right, I'm teaching kids and everything, which was fine. I'm not the best with remembering names. I'm better with faces. So I just any kids group that I had, I would just give them nicknames. Like one of them, I asked them, it's like, if you could have a nickname that's an animal, what would you have? One of the girls said she wanted to be Stallion. And then there was another kid who wanted to be Duck. And then there was another kid who wanted to be Panda. And it was just easier for me. It was cool. I had fun, but parents are the absolute worst. You're terrible. You literally teach like a 5-year-old on their like 7-day skiing ever. And it's like, oh, how'd they do today? It's like, oh, pretty good. Like, we just went over like the same stuff that we did like yesterday and the day before. It's like, so can I take them off the tram? Where did I say that you can take them off the tram? It's like, well, you said that they're good now. It's a kid. And your kid's been skiing for a week, right? It's like, yeah. Did you go off the tram on your 7th day of skiing ever? No. It's like, okay, put yourself in their shoes.
5-year-old child is not a protege.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what they always assume. And I've even had moments where I remember this one day where I had a group, the Gage was telling me, it's like, hey, Bullard, like, we may have some stragglers. I know that you're on the bunny slopes and you're good with the kids. It's like, just go take a quick lap and then swing by the kids' ranch and see if there's any kids that show up. It's like, cool, absolutely. We go up. We ski down, we have a blast, and then go up to Gage. He's like, yeah, there's no stragglers, but just a heads up, one of the kids' mom is tailing you. I'm like, really? It's like, yeah. When you get onto the lift, she's going to be 3 chairs back. She's wearing a gray jacket. So get onto the chairlift. Sure enough, look behind, 3 chairs back. There's a woman staying alone in the middle, holes in her hands and everything, staring at me. So we continue to ski. And then it's the end of the day, dropping off the kids, whatever, everything's fine. And Gage comes up to me and it's like, hey, so remember that mom that was tailing you? It's like, yeah. It's like, she filed a complaint against you. For what? I was like, well, she saw you're skiing backwards and she thought that you were a bad instructor because you're skiing backwards. Like, because I wanted to look at how they were turning. He's like, yeah, I know. It makes no sense. It's like, just letting you know. It's like, okay, well, do I have to talk to her? And it's like, no. It's like, cool. Then I genuinely do not give a fuck what she thinks. As long as I don't have to talk to her. So ski instructing is not for me. And that's okay.
And skiing backwards is something that you do all the time as a ski instructor.
Well, I mean, I don't know. Is that a bad thing to do?
No.
Are you saying that sarcastically?
No, I'm not. I'm serious. I ski backwards all the time, especially with beginner kids, because you got to be able to like see if they've fallen over. You don't want to get like several turns ahead and then they can't get up and then you have to hike back up. I mean, the only thing that's good for is like making sure you have a good skier butt, like constantly. I think that's the big thing is like when I go free skiing, I'm like constantly still doing my like little head checks to make sure that no one's fallen over.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, if parents don't like it, then, you know, that's just their problem.
Helicopter parents.
Oh, they're the worst. They're terrible. Classic instructing.
It's the same in most sports. There's always helicopter parents. Ones that like want to teach for you and stuff. It's
well, yeah, and like that's the thing is, you know, there was this other moment where I remember I was teaching a group of kids. We went to lunch. Lunch for them is like nap time and gummy packs and, you know, chocolate chip cookies. Fucking phenomenal, by the way. But so then I remember having lunch. All of a sudden, like out of nowhere, one of the moms of the kids comes in. So it's like, oh, hey, honey, how are you doing? Like, you having fun? Okay, bye. And then we go out back out skiing. And right for like the next 30 minutes, it's just, where's mommy? Where's mommy? Where's mommy? I'm just like, it's like, she's not here. We're just going out skiing. It's like, I want to go in. I miss mommy. And just freaking the fuck out. It's like, all right, go to the kids' ranch. Go to Gage. He calls her up. She comes in. I'm like, I pull her aside. I was like, look. It's like, how old is your kid? It's like, she's 6. It's like, okay. You wouldn't go to your daughter's school in the middle of the day to see how her day is doing, right? And she's like, God, no. It's like, okay, same idea. Ski school. Let us do our job. You are paying all this money. Like, if you want us to teach them, be away from them. But if you are so keen on seeing how your kid is doing or how well they're skiing and whatnot, you should teach them how to ski. I was very blunt about it. It was not the nicest way to put it. With the kid just screaming my good ear off, it was annoying.
By all means, hide in the bushes, but do not make yourself visible.
Pretty much. Yeah. couldn't have said it any better.
I've had to say it a few times, that's why.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, what else do you want to talk about?
What I don't
do
you know, want, what else what you do got you
want
for
to,
me?
What do you want to tell me? How's your summer going? How's not skiing? How's your other activities?
I've been mountain biking a lot, which has been good. Well, not the past 2 weeks because I've been working my ass off. But summer's been going good. Like we spoke earlier, town is just an absolute nightmare. I think this is probably one of the busiest summers I've seen in a long time. And actually, it may even be the busiest summer I think that Jackson and the parks have ever seen. I think we're like 6% increase. So I don't know. It's going good. Skiing's always on my mind. But when was the summer solstice? That was back in June, right?
Yeah, a few weeks ago.
The summer solstice, and everyone's like, oh, it's the longest day of summer. And it's like, but my first instinct is like, but you know what that means from here on out, right? And they're like, no, it's like days are getting shorter. Winter is coming. And it's the end of July. Got to be August. August is going to go by like that. And then before you know it, it's going to be fall. Before you know it, it's going to be winter. And I'm really excited. I need to figure out what to do with all the skis I have. Because I have a lot of them. And I just became an ambassador for Sega skis.
Oh, yeah. So I was going to ask you about that.
They told me, it's like, oh, you need to buy a pair of our skis and like rep it. It's like, all right. So now I have 2 pairs of skis right now in my room. I'm probably going to make my Sega skis like my touring setup or something like that. So we'll see what happens.
Well, hopefully they run the lifts this year.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm going to buy a mountain resort pass.
Oh my gosh, that's a real bombshell.
I know, yeah. Because, okay, does Connie Kemmerer or any of the Kemmerer family listen to your podcast?
No, not that I know of.
Well, after this episode, once you post it, please send an email to Connie because I'm royally going to call her out and all the heads of the mountain resorts right now. So I think it's just such bullshit that I get it. It's out of your control. We closed about 5 weeks before the season was supposed to end last winter. Everyone was asking for a partial refund. And we're not asking for like, at least like the people that I spoke with, we're not asking for like an arm and a leg. Like just give us $200 or $300 back. It's not much. Sure, it's going to add up, but like we're not asking for like a full fucking refund. And when they announced that they were going to give us a partial refund on our season pass for this coming season, what they did is they increased the price value, but we're still paying the exact same as we did last year. So we're getting that discount or the refund that we're really not getting it. And so, and the other part of that is like, let's say hypothetically, like for my case, getting the early season discount, I pay $1,400 for a season pass. What is the likelihood that I get a refund if they close down? Absolutely nothing. They are not going to give us anything back.
Really?
And, you know, a lot of people are, yeah, God no. Like after what they just did with doing a partial refund, none of us got any money back. And what's even worse is that they released the pass prices right when everyone got those $1,200 stimulus checks. I was like, hey, I know that you guys aren't working and you're on unemployment and you just got the stimulus check, but you could get a season pass for next season. It's like, so you guys have a lot of nerve for doing that. And I mean, it's just, I haven't looked into it lately. I really don't think that they're going to give us a refund on any of our money. But if they were to do so, I think that'd be awesome. Like, let's say hypothetically, we paid the $1,400 and by like January 15th or something like that, if we close before then, we'll get like 70% of our money back. Like they should have like set dates where it's like, okay, if it's like by this date, we'll give you this much of your money back. Kind of give us a little bit of incentive. It's like, okay, like we're watching your back, but you're also watching our back.
A little bit of a guarantee.
Exactly. But the mountain resort has not cared for the local clientele for probably for the last 15 years. And the prices keep getting higher and higher, but we keep coming back to it like I do. I will fully admit I'm 100% a village rat. It makes it tougher because, especially with the Icon Pass and all that. My beef with the Icon Pass is I remember getting my pass for last season, and I asked the ticket window lady, it's like, hey, like, It's like, since I get a discount and everything, did we get an icon pass or anything? And it's like, oh no, you have to buy like a full-fledged, like the most expensive one in order to get that. It's like, so what you're telling me is that all people that are getting discounts through their place of business or Mount Resort employees do not get it? And they're like, correct. That's the biggest ripoff ever. It's not like I travel anywhere else anyway. But you know what? During last winter, I was thinking about doing some more traveling, but definitely not going to do that now because I do not want people to travel here. I think people should stay at their home mountains for this coming year and just enjoy that so there's no risk of us having any more outbreaks.
Yeah.
That's my spiel.
Love it. It's a crazy situation. I actually have to write an article about this a bit later today. So the Australian ski resorts are obviously like working as like with quite a lot of loss, and they've asked the Australian government for $2 billion.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Even the Vail resorts?
Yeah, I think so. I need to look into it properly, but well, like Hotham and Falls Creek are owned by Vail and they have shut. Only Mount Buller and Threadbury and Parrish are open.
Good on you, Mount Buller. I'm still waiting for my severance package, but we'll see when that gets to me. it's so ridiculous because you look at it and like if Vail's going to be the ultimate deciding factor on every other resort. Because when everything was going on, mountains were starting to close last winter. Everyone's thinking it's like, oh shit. And then rumors start swirling around. It's like Vail's going to close. Well, I mean, with all the resorts that Vail owns, once Vail closes, we have to shut down. Because if we do not shut down, we're going to get all those people from California, Colorado, Utah, wherever. They're all going to come up to us. And it's going to be a disaster. A disaster. And I think it was the very next day after Vail closed where we closed. So good on you, Connie and Jay. You made a good decision for once in like the past 10 years. So
what a time.
Oh, I know. We'll see what happens. What are your expectations on it?
My expectations on like...
Yeah, on the ski season.
I have no idea. I feel like anything is possible right now.
I just want to hear your expectations. What do you think will happen?
What do I think will happen? I don't think it's sustainable for them to run the resort. If everything's in lockdown, I think the resort won't open. But they're running their summer operations, so I feel like they will run it.
Well, and like that's the thing. I was asking one of my friends who worked in ticketing, now is working up at the White House. He was telling me, so like, what's going to go on for the ski season? It's like, oh, they're fully convinced that they're going to have one. Like, going to go like for the whole season. It's like, okay. And then, you know, and he even made a comment. It's like, yeah, they're actually thinking about opening up the tram for the winter. That would be an absolute disaster. Like, there's no social distancing whatsoever. And they're like, oh, yeah, well, that's the thing. They're thinking about putting plastic dividers in.
What?
He's like, so they're going to just cage us in there? He's like, yeah, that's even worse, especially like with the tram line. So everyone is within inches of each other. Everyone's breathing, coughing, spitting on each other.
You literally like don't even have personal space, let alone.
You don't. It's gonna be weird. Because, like, what I'm curious about, if they were to do that, with the Gandhi last winter, they had, like, the rule. It's like, okay, four singles, go on to this box. Are you a group together? You can go. Are you a group together? You can go. They only, like, kept it to, like, certain groups. They didn't mix anything. All single people, you know, we didn't give a shit. And I don't know how they're going to dictate doing the tram line if they did that for the Gandhi line. Because it's an entire singles line for the tram.
It's so hard to even, like, have an opinion. I guess up until a few weeks ago, I thought I was going to be ski instructing this year in Australia. So who knows?
Go to Mount Buller.
Except I, like, can't leave my state right now. Like, you have to have permission to leave Western Australia.
Wait, so where is Mount Buller in relation to you?
So, like, the opposite side of the country. So Mount Buller is, like, a 2.5-hour drive from Melbourne, southeast.
Got it. Well, I think you need to go over to the other coast. You know how it is. Because from what I've been told, it is a terrible resort.
It rains a lot there.
That was always a big kicker. It's like, does it snow a lot there? It's like, if you consider rain.
Good on them for being able to stay open, at least for now. We'll see if they're still open by the time I publish this. But yeah, they just had their first COVID case recorded at Mount Buller.
Oh, really?
Yeah. There's been like a big outbreak in Melbourne exponentially over the last few weeks and I guess caused the season to be shut down at Hotham and Falls Creek.
Crazy times. Crazy times.
I was like ready to pack my car like so many times.
Go to your ski hill?
Yeah, across.
But I mean, how's it feel having the summer for the first time in what, like 5 years?
Well, we're not quite there yet, but it definitely feels like it feels summery.
Okay.
Some of the
That's
time.
That's good. Well, I mean, what's the temperature there? Fahrenheit, please. I'm not good with Celsius.
Oh, gosh. All right. We'll have to convert that. So whatever like 20 degrees Celsius is, that is roughly 68 degrees.
That's so nice. That's warm out.
It's like summer.
And it's one number away from my favorite number. Everyone's favorite number, and if everyone says otherwise, they're full of shit. Yeah, I would say enjoy it. Enjoy riding horses and doing all that sort of stuff, because you haven't done that for a long time. Okay, how many days have you skied in the last 5 years?
Probably more than you. I reckon that there's like some winters in Australia that I wouldn't have clocked 1,000 days in the last 5 years.
Yeah. See? Impressive.
Give or take.
Give or take? All right, that's fair.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, if I could, I would ski year-round. But that's the tough part because enjoy summer. I love the seasons and everything. Living in a town like Jackson, the off-seasons are really nice because you can go out, go travel, go see the world, go do the things that you've always wanted to do. Then you come back here and then it's like just like a sigh of relief. It's like, cool, getting ready for the season. I'm glad to be back home, and you go from there, and it's perfect.
I can't wait to travel again. I really miss it.
Me too. I could have been in Bali, London, Ireland,
Australia,
all in the month of June.
Yeah, and you wouldn't just come down because you're in Bali. Come down to us.
What, you want me to come see you in Australia?
I told you to. It's only 3.5 hours on the plane.
Is it? Oh, that's nothing. Would you take me skiing?
I'd take you skiing.
All right.
We'd go to Mount Buller, be severely disappointed, and then we'd go to Hotham.
I mean, is Hotham really that good of a ski hill?
It's fun. It's no Jackson Hole, but it's a fun place.
Is it like moonlight? Yeah, a big sky.
I don't know. Like, it's short, but there's lots of like little steep bits. And it's really pretty because the resort's on top of the mountain.
That's pretty cool.
Best sunrises and sunsets. And
well,
you get to ski amongst the gum trees. Snow gums. They're all twisted and weird and cool.
And they cake your goggles with artificial snow and ice?
I mean, sometimes.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, don't bullshit a bullshitter.
We should probably wrap this up, but any life advice, anything you want to add?
No, I think I've embarrassed myself enough for one day, so I think that's pretty good.
Perfect. That was totally my goal.
Hey, other girl. All right. Perfect. Thank you for interviewing me. I greatly appreciate it.
And that is a wrap on my episode with Bulla. He would like to dedicate this episode to his mom, Squirrel Rock. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed this chat. And if you haven't already, please leave the Mountain Cosmos a rating or review. If you have time and if you have Apple Podcasts, it would be great. It really helps people find the Mountain Cosmos. See you later.